I was looking at a picture of a thermal power plant this morning. You know, the type giant cooling towers, acres of piping?
Turbines the size of a house.
Exactly. It looks like it's built to survive an apocalypse.
Yeah.
But then I started reading the research for today's deep dive, and I realized the entire integrity of that massive facility, it hangs by a thread.
Or, more accurately, by a microscopic crystal you can't even see.
It's a real paradox, isn't it? We build these colosseums of energy, but the real battle for efficiency and for safety is happening at the atomic level.
Absolutely. If the atoms lose their grip, the whole thing could, well, fail.
That is the scale we are dealing with today. We're zooming all the way in. We're looking at a master's thesis from Pohang University of Science and Technology by Yu Young Song.
And the title is a bit of a mouthful.
It is. Thermodynamic study on BNFE substituted Cr23C6 using first principles calculations.
Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue.
No, it does not. But stick with this because this is actually a detective story. It's a locked room mystery where the room is a steel pipe and the victim is its structural integrity.
And the hero is this tiny element that acts like a kind of magic dust.
Right. And the detective tool isn't a magnifying glass. It's a supercomputer solving quantum physics equations.
So before we get to the quantum mechanics, let's set the stakes.
Okay.
Why are we so worried about the steel in a power plant? I mean, steel is tough. It's steel.
It is tough, yes. But the environment inside a modern high-efficiency power plant is basically hell on earth.
That's a good way to put it. To get more electricity out of the same fuel, you have to push the temperature and pressure higher and higher.
We're talking about steam at what, 600 degrees Celsius?
And 300 bar of pressure. I mean, it's glowing red hot. At those temperatures, steel stops behaving like the rigid solid we're used to.
It starts to act more plastic.
Exactly. If you put it under stress, like that steam pressure, it doesn't just bend. It slowly, permanently stretches over time.
And this is the villain of our story, creep.
Creep. It's such a deceptive name. It sounds slow and harmless, but for a metallurgist, it's a nightmare.
It's time-dependent deformation.
Right. Imagine you have a bookshelf and you load it up with heavy books. Today, it looks straight.
Sure.
But if that bookshelf is made of a material experiencing creep, you come back 5 years later and the middle has sagged a few inches.
The weight didn't change, gravity didn't change.
The material just gave up. Now, apply that to a pipe carrying high-pressure steam. If it creeps too much, the walls thin out and eventually.
It bursts. And these plants need to run for 30 years or more without that happening.
Precisely. So to fight creep, engineers use special alloys, specifically high chromium steels. But inside the steel, there are these tiny particles called precipitates.
Carbides. And the paper focuses on one in particular, M23C6.
Right. Let's decode that. C is carbon. M is metal, usually chromium. Think of the steel itself as being made of grains, like stones in a wall.
Okay.
The M23C6 particles act like little pins or anchors sitting between those stones.
So they literally pin the grains together so they can't slide past each other.
That is their entire job. They lock the microstructure in place. As long as those pins hold, the steel doesn't creep.
But I'm guessing the pins don't hold forever.
Not at 600 degrees. Over time, thermodynamics takes over. These tiny M23C6 particles start to change. They coarsen.
Coarsen, what does that mean?
It means the tiny particles dissolve and feed the larger particles. So over 10 or 20 years, instead of millions of tiny sharp pins holding your wall together.
You end up with a few giant boulders spaced far apart.
And a few boulders are terrible at holding a wall together. The pinning effect is lost, the grains start to slide, and that leads to what we call tertiary creep.
And then rupture.
Okay, so the mission is to stop the pins from getting big. And this is where the magic dust comes in, boron.
A tiny bit of boron. We are talking about 100 parts per million.
100 ppm. That's like a pinch of salt in a bathtub.
Maybe even less. But the effect is undeniable. The data shows that the strength of the steel goes up linearly with how much boron you add. It delays that fatal coarsening. So case closed. Boron fixes it. Why write a thesis about it?
Because for a long time, we didn't know why. It was a complete black box.
We just knew it worked.
We knew the input, boron, we knew the output, longer life, but the mechanism inside was invisible.
Why couldn't they just, look at it under a microscope? We have electron microscopes that can see atoms.
You can see heavy atoms, chromium, iron. Those are big targets. Boron is element number 5. It's tiny.
It's very light.
Incredibly light. Trying to spot a boron atom inside a dense steel lattice is like trying to find one specific invisible marble in a giant ball pit.
So they were flying blind. They knew it worked, but they couldn't see how.
And that's dangerous in engineering. If you don't know why something works, you can't optimize it. You can't predict when it might stop working.
Enter Yu Yongsong and the supercomputer.
Yeah.
This is where the thesis pivots to computational metallurgy.
Correct. The author used what are called first principles calculations.
I hear that term thrown around a lot. We need to think from first principles.
Mm-hmm.
But in physics, it means something very specific.
It does. It means ab initio, from the beginning. You run a simulation without feeding it any experimental data. You just tell the computer, here's an iron atom, here's a carbon atom, here are the laws of quantum mechanics. Now you tell me what happens.
That sounds incredibly difficult.
It is computationally exhausting. You're basically solving the Schrodinger equation for all the electrons in the crystal.
The one that deals with probabilities of where electrons are.
That's the one. And doing that for a system with over 100 atoms is, well, basically impossible to do perfectly.
So you have to use some clever tricks.
Very clever tricks. The thesis mentions using density functional theory, or DFT.
DFT. Yeah. Is that a way to simplify the math?
It is. Instead of tracking every single electron interacting with every other electron, which is a nightmare, DFT just looks at the density of the electron cloud as a whole.
A brilliant workaround.
It really is. It makes the math solvable, but keeps the accuracy high. And the real key to making the whole thing run is the Born-Oppenheimer approximation.
I know Oppenheimer, the atomic bomb guy.
Same one. This approximation is based on a simple fact. Atomic nuclei are heavy and slow. Electrons are light and fast.
Okay.
So to solve the equations, you just pretend the nuclei are frozen in place. You calculate what all the fast little electrons are doing around them.
And then you move the nuclei a tiny bit, freeze them again, and recalculate.
Exactly.
So it's like stop motion animation for atoms.
That is a perfect analogy. It's stop motion quantum mechanics.
Okay. So with this stop motion method, the author builds a virtual model of this M23C6 carbide. And the structure is a beast, 92 metal atoms, 24 carbon atoms.
It is. And once they built the baseline model pure chromium carbide, CR23C6, they started playing virtual alchemy.
This is the part I loved. They started swapping atoms. Okay, computer, what happens if we pull out a chromium atom and stick an iron atom in there?
Or what if we swap a carbon atom for a boron atom? They wanted to test the stability.
And for that, we need to talk about formation enthalpy?
Yes. Think of it as a measure of how much a structure wants to exist. If the number is negative, energy is released when it forms. It's happy. It's stable.
And if the number is positive?
It's unstable. It hates existing. It'll fall apart the first chance it gets.
So we're looking for big negative numbers. That's the goal.
That's the goal. So the baseline, pure chromium carbide, CR23C6. The formation enthalpy was negative 8.61 kilojoules per mole.
Okay, negative 8.61. That's our benchmark. Stable enough to exist.
Exactly. Now, in real steel, which is mostly iron, some iron atoms are going to try to sneak into these carbides. So they simulated that.
And what happened?
The structure got unhappy. If you try to make the carbide entirely out of iron Fe23C6, the enthalpy flips to positive, plus 3.66.
Whoa. So pure iron carbide is a total failure. It shouldn't exist.
And we don't see it in nature. So even adding some iron makes the number less negative. It pushes it towards instability.
So iron is a destabilizer. It's making our pins weaker. Which seems like a problem since steel is, you know, mostly iron.
It is a huge problem until you add the boron.
The magic dust.
This is the real aha moment of the whole paper. They took the model and swapped the carbon atoms for boron atoms.
And what did the computer say?
Stability skyrocketed. For the pure chromium version, swapping carbon for boron dropped the energy from -8.61 all the way down to -13.53.
That's a massive jump. A much deeper negative number.
It is. But that wasn't even the biggest surprise. The biggest surprise came when they looked at the interaction between the villain and the hero.
You mean iron and boron together?
In the same crystal. Remember, iron made it unstable. Boron makes it stable. But when you put them together to create F23B6, something amazing happens.
What's the number?
The formation enthalpy drops to -17.11 kilojoule.
Wait, hold on. -17.1 on. That's way lower than the chromium version. That's the lowest number we've seen by far.
It is the most stable structure in the entire simulation.
So iron on its own destroys the carbide. But iron plus boron makes the strongest, most stable version of all.
That's it. It turns out that iron and boron have this specific chemical affinity inside this lattice. They want to be together.
This connects all the dots.
It really does.
The engineers add boron to high chromium steel. but the steel is full of iron. So the boron isn't just floating around, it's hunting down the iron that's getting into the carbides and locking it down.
Precisely. It turns a potential weakness, the presence of iron, into a massive strength. And this explains why the boron-doped carbides don't coarsen.
Because they're so thermodynamically happy.
They're in a deep energy well. They don't want to dissolve. They don't want to grow. They want to stay exactly as they are, tiny, stable pins.
And because they stay small, they keep holding the steel together.
And the power plant doesn't blow up.
And we get our electricity. It's incredible that we needed quantum mechanics to figure out that iron and boron are the power couple of metallurgy.
It really validates the whole approach. There was actually another finding in the paper that sort of proved the model was working correctly. It had to do with magnetism.
Oh, right. I saw that. The magnetic moment.
Yeah. Standard chromium carbides are non-magnetic. But the simulation predicted that the iron-heavy versions, especially that super stable F23B6, should be ferromagnetic.
So if you could isolate one of these little particles, it would stick to a fridge magnet.
It would. And that's a crucial detail because it proves that swapping atoms isn't just changing the size or weight. It's fundamentally reconfiguring the electron cloud.
It's proof that the virtual alchemy matches up with reality.
Exactly.
So we know boron works. We now know why it works. What do we actually do with this information?
Oh, this is immediately useful. Modern metallurgy isn't about trial and error anymore. We use thermodynamic software, things like MT-Data.
Like a recipe builder for new alloys.
That's a great way to think of it. It predicts what structures will form at what temperatures, but that software is only as good as the data you feed it.
And before this study, they didn't have accurate data for boron in these systems.
They were using estimates. It was a blank spot on the map. Now they can plug in the real number, nex of 17.11 kilojoule. They can plug in the exact volume changes.
So they can design and test new super steels on a computer before they ever spend a dime melting actual metal.
And that is absolutely critical. We're trying to push power plants to 700 degrees Celsius now to work with renewables. To do that, we need alloys designed with atomic precision. We can't afford to guess.
It's a huge shift. We aren't just observing materials anymore. We are calculating them from the ground up.
It's the definition of deep tech.
You know, before we wrap up, I have to ask about a thought I had. We just established that iron and boron F23B6 is the ultimate stable combination.
Yes, according to the simulation.
But the industry standard is high chromium steel. We're obsessed with chromium. If the iron-boron bond is the strongest thing on the chart, why are we still so married to chromium?
Well, that's the provocative question, isn't it? Metallurgy is always a trade-off. Chromium is famous for one big thing.
Corrosion resistance.
Rust.
Exactly. It creates that passive oxide layer that stops rust. You don't want a pipe that's perfectly resistant to creep but rusts through in a year. Sure, nobody wants a rusty pipe. But it does make you wonder.
It does.
Could we design a steel that relies mostly on this iron-boron backbone for strength? And then maybe handles the corrosion problem some other way? Or what other magic dusts are hiding on the periodic table?
And that is the exciting part. We've analyzed boron, but what if we swap carbon for nitrogen? What about adding a dash of yttrium? There are so many combinations we haven't run the math on yet.
The periodic table is a big playground. And thanks to supercomputers, we can now explore it without, you know, getting our hands dirty.
Or burning our eyebrows off. It's certainly safer. And a lot faster.
Who knew thermodynamic stability could be such a cliffhanger? We've gone from a global energy challenge to a single atom of boron saving the day. That is the power of the deep dive.
It's always a pleasure to explore the microscopic universe with you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep looking closely at the world around you. You never know what tiny element is holding it all together. Catch you on the next deep dive.